I'd like to welcome everybody who's calling in and listening. Thank you, and we hope you can find some encouragement and some value from this call. Also want to thank Dwayne for agreeing to spend some time and share some of his stories and what he's observed and seen. And before we jump right into the call, I just wanted to give a little bit of an overview of the call to arms, what it is about, and what's spawning these phone calls. Call to Arms is a market garden seminar where we're helping to lay out a roadmap or a plan for market gardeners to understand what are the critical tools it takes to achieve nutrient density. And if you want a full discussion of nutrient density, we're referencing foods with more nutrition, higher both of the minerals, the phytonutrients, and even those essential sugars that science is discovering how significant these sugars are for cellular health. That's what we're talking about, growing foods that, in practical terms, taste a lot better and bring customers back again because the flavors are superior. And so we're laying out these tools. On this call, we're looking at some of the experiences that Dwayne has seen looking at market gardens, looking at backyard gardens, looking at even row crops and larger scale production, and seeing the effects of the fertility recommendations from International Ag Labs, which is basically the REAMS program. And I'd like to mention at the beginning, if you have any questions for Dwayne or I to look at, please feel free to email me at john.frank@aglabs.com. That's J-O-N, J-O-N dot Frank, F-R-A-N-K, at aglabs.com, A-G-L-A-B-S.com. So with that, I'd like to just kind of introduce Dwayne a little bit. Dwayne's been working with International Ag Labs as a dealer for a few years now, and really has learned the principles and paid his dues, really, to understand the system. And so now it's time to see from his eyes some things which are happening. So, Dwayne, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we'll go from there.
Well, thank you, John. Well, we live in northern Arkansas, and there's a lot of rocks and a lot of clay here. And so gardening isn't, you would say, isn't a walk in the park. So when we were, before I started with International Ag Labs, we were trying to garden down here. And we weren't having very good luck. And I told my wife, either we're going to have a good garden or we're not going to garden at all. And so we tried a lot of stuff, and I found International Ag Labs. And I still remember the first day that I called up there. And Dan Scow answered the phone. And I said, I got potato beetles on my potatoes. He said, oh, well, you don't have high bricks potatoes. I said, high bricks, what do you mean? He said, well, the sugars aren't high enough. And so it kind of went from there, and we started soil testing. And we started seeing phenomenal results right away. We, in the summer of 06, we did a soil, summer of 06. The end of May, we dug out our carrots, and the bricks was 3, and they tasted horrible, and the children didn't like them. And anyway, we applied the first broadcast in June 1, and by that fall, we dug carrots, and the bricks was 13.
Of the same year? Children,
the same year, the same identical year. And the children really liked them, and they kept in the refrigerator for 3.5 months, just like the day they came out of the garden, which we finished them off in about 3.5 months. And so we decided we were on to something. And so we tested again, put on the fall broadcast, and started the next spring. And the first thing we noticed was that the emergence or the germination of the seeds was a lot better. They just came popping out of the ground. with an attitude, you might say. And the early stuff, we noticed the lettuce was sweeter, and the peas, green peas were sweeter. And so as the summer progressed, we kept on. Another thing that we saw was the species of weeds changed. At first we had thorny weeds that would have stickers and thorns, and in the spring of 06, our children didn't like to go to the garden barefoot because it hurt their feet. In the summer of 07, we noticed that the species of weeds had changed. We still had weeds, but they had changed so that the children could go to the garden barefooted. And so that was a real nice. We were looking for food quality, and we thought this was a really nice experience to have the weeds change like that. Anyway, in that summer then, we harvested some cherry tomatoes that went 13 breaks. And the plant produced so much, we couldn't eat all of it. I'd go out there evenings, and I'd pick a 13-quart bowl full of cherry tomatoes. And one evening I counted them just out of curiosity, and I picked over 1,000 tomatoes in one evening. And those were the ripe ones, and there was a lot of green ones on them.
On how many plants?
One.
One plant.
One yellow plant. It was a Sun Sugar. Sun Sugar was the name. And off the red one, we had a red one. I can't remember the name of the red one, but I picked 537 off of that red one that evening. So the production was absolutely more than anything we had ever seen or experienced. And I was taking these tomatoes. I gave some to some of my customers, and then I took them over to the health food store a couple times, and they started buying them. Anyway, about the third time I went in there with these tomatoes, I had them bagged up, and the owner's wife was there at the counter. And when she saw those tomatoes, she said, "Duane, those aren't going on the show. Those are going home with me. I'm going to be selfish. My children eat those like candy. I don't know what you're doing, but boy, they're good." So I thought that was a good testimony. And go ahead.
Oh, I've had the same story from other customers. They're just too good to give away. I'm keeping all of these for myself. It was, again, high-brix tomatoes.
Mm-hmm. A 13-brix tomato will taste different than... I don't know how to explain it. You have to taste it to believe it. It is really something. And then that summer, we also harvested a 10-pound sweet potato and a 7-pound sweet potato. And then we knew we were onto something. And I took those sweet potatoes up to the local orchard to weigh them on their scales. And she said, "Well, that's a baby there. That's not a potato. It weighed 10 pounds and 2 ounces. That was exactly my weight when I was born." And so overall, that year in 07, we just had a wonderful year. We had the onions go from a brix of 5 to 12. We had the green beans go from about a 4 to a 9. And everything just really improved. The soil loosened up. Before we started, the soil was so hard that I had to use the claws of a hammer to take a soil sample. And by the end of 07, I could dig down with my bare hands 8, 10, 12 inches in various areas of the garden.
Now, all of this happened because you just made a call to International Ag Labs and talked to Dr. Scow and said you don't have high bricks?
I guess. And I just believed what you guys told me, and I just put it on. Okay. I said, "I'm going to try something."
Okay. Well, what was the difference? I mean, obviously you did something different to go from such low bricks to high bricks. Can you describe... Can you describe what was the process that you were working on and what happened in between those two things?
Well, the first test came back that we were very low on calcium, we were very high on potassium, and very high on phosphorus. And the ratio between phosphorus and potassium was not correct. And Well, I started talking with you, and you explained to me why that ratio is so important, and that I'll be a professional weed grower until that ratio of phosphorus to potassium does improve. And so the number one rule you taught me was, if you have too much of something, don't put more on. And if you don't have enough of something, put more on. And so we started with a dry broadcast. We put on a couple different forms of calcium. And we started with, you started educating me about the energy in the soil, how important it is to keep the energy up in the soil. And that was a big thing that summer. And then we also started with the foliar feeding. And all three of those, the dry broadcast, without that, I don't think anything will happen. And then if you don't keep the herbs up with the nutrient drenches throughout the season, you don't get plant performance. And then the foliar sprays really pushed the production for us that first year. I can see that. Because if you put on a foliar spray that's appropriate for the plant, it will... Well, what we saw was that the amount of flowers that those tomatoes put on, and the amount of flowers that the okra put on, and the zucchini, and they just flowered like you wouldn't believe.
That's amazing. And so you attributed all three things working together, the broadcast, the nutrient drenches for the energy, and the foliar spray to really push the performance of the plant.
Very much.
Well, that is part of our Hybrix Gardens program, and if people are interested, they can always look for that, get some more information from us on that. And that really led to a lot of people seeing that there's a difference. Go on and keep telling your story. It's very interesting.
Well, I was just going to say the okra. We had to pick the okra every day.
Wow.
To keep it from getting too big. The zucchini is the same way. We just had a wonderful year, and that was the first year. But what happened then is we began to see, as the summer went on, it started regressing, kind of. We saw that stuff started to fall off a little bit. It didn't do quite as well. And so when we came back and tested again, we did another soil test that fall. And when we came back with that full broadcast, what I'm trying to say here is it seemed like the broadcast we had put on, that really brought us an energy flush. But then you have to do it again, and you have to do it again to keep on building. Because being the phosphorus and the potassium were too high, we had to keep on putting on calcium. And we did that broadcast again, and we put up our greenhouse for the winter, our winter green crops, lettuce, kale, and so on. And we raised some kale that was 9 bricks and some lettuce that was 8 bricks. And that was the highest bricks greens we had ever had up to that time. And I remember putting that on the supper table, and the children... I told them, take a taste, take a little bit. And they ate that, and we sat around there like rabbits, and we ate that bowl of greens empty before we ate anything else.
Now, did you eat the kale, just straight kale by itself?
Just straight kale by itself.
Wow. You know, that is very interesting. You know, I find that the most honest people to tell you if something is good or not, if you don't have a refractometer, is just ask children. Put stuff out and say, try a little taste, and like you did, and you'll get the honest answer.
They won't eat it if they don't like it, that's for sure.
That's right, and that's a natural God-given instinct that they have, just to teach us parents, you know, what we're putting in front of our kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have not heard of, I haven't talked to anybody that had higher than an 8 bricks lettuce, so... I don't know if you've seen or talked to anybody that had a higher level, Dwayne?
Not on lettuce.
No, that's the highest I've
collards,
heard.
No.
Yeah, collards and kale and things, I've heard of that going higher.
Mm-hmm. And it seems like the darker lettuce will have a higher Brix than the light-colored lettuce.
Yeah. Well, that's amazing. That's must have had quite an impact then on your children's appreciation of vegetables.
Oh, it just made a big difference. Now they like to garden, and they all help in the garden. And we dug the potatoes just with our hands that fall. It was easier than using a fork because the soil was so loose. And the year before, we had a disaster with the potatoes. We didn't have many at all. That fall, I can't say we didn't have any potato beetles that year because we had just a couple here and there. I saw them, but it didn't do any damage. Anyway, we harvested an average of 16 potatoes per hill.
Wow.
And the year before, we had a failure. So, needless to say, we're very excited.
Wow, that's amazing. See, then you began working with us as a dealer, helping other gardeners.
That's
and,
right.
Well, what happened then in the next year? Do you want to continue on your story of your garden, or do you want to? Where do you want to go here?
Well, yeah, we can. Let's see. 08. Well, we moved in 08, and so we had to leave that garden and start over on another one. And it was actually in a worse position when we got this new garden than that other one was when we started. The phosphorus was sky high, and the potassium is also very high, but the calcium is higher. So we don't have as far to go on the calcium, but the phosphorus is higher. And so we're still, tonight for supper, I still ate some zucchini and radishes and cucumbers out of the garden. And they're not as good as what we had in the other garden, but they're improving. This summer when we came here, the lady that had the garden, her tomatoes were, three Brix. Her green beans were about four, and now our green beans are six. Just by soil testing this summer and putting on one broadcast, we upped the Brix of the green beans from four to six. And
that's
so
significant. That's a great jump. That's a fabulous jump in one in that short of a time.
And the taste is still not, you know, a six green bean isn't all that great, but it does taste like food. And four Brix will just kind of taste like dirty dishwater, maybe. It doesn't really taste very good.
And when you try to take that kind of a four Brix bean, which is pretty common, but you take that to the market, there's not a lot of time that it'll last before it begins to break down.
Right, and the customers will buy it on appearance only, and they probably won't be back. If they look good, you'll sell them, but then if they don't taste good, they'll just kind of forget to come back.
Mm-hmm. One of the things we find so frequently is that calcium is short in unavailable calcium in a majority of the soils, not in every soil, but a majority. And it seems that the importance of calcium just about cannot be overemphasized. It is the critical thing that determines and drives quality in produce.
And quantity.
And quantity, that's right. And when we start working on a garden, even on a garden that's very imbalanced, maybe very top-heavy with a whole lot of phosphorus and potassium, not enough calcium, if we can really start moving that calcium up, we can still make some change in the flavor and the quality as long as we're increasing the calcium availability. That's what I've been seeing when talking to some of the gardeners. So there is hope if you have a really imbalanced soil, but most people are not checking, and so the imbalance seems to be getting worse and worse if they're not changing their program according to the soil. So
that's right. And the calcium, if you continue to put on calcium, it seems like you can sidestep maybe some of the negatives of that if you continue putting it on with your program. I mean, what I'm saying is if you back off and not apply any, the soil reverts very quickly back to where it was. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do. And even if you look at the soil test and it says you have, 3,000 pounds of available calcium, but you have a very high level of phosphorus, if you'll keep putting low maintenance amounts or lower doses but still keep doing it, as you say, you're going to see a lot better results than if you completely stop applying limestone.
And foliar spraying in that particular situation works very well.
Right.
If you have a high calcium, not a high calcium, but say 3,000 pounds, like you said, but your phosphorus is very excessive, and you continue putting on maintenance amounts of calcium and then you foliar spray, it seems that really improves the bricks and the flavor and everything.
Right. Well, the overall goal of the High Bricks Gardens program was simply to help people grow nutrition in their own backyard. And so that involves really just getting the nutrients out into the soil and then using nutrient drenches to keep the soil energy up, and then foliar sprays really to get it up into the plant so that people can get the nutrition in their food. And that's really where the market is moving toward. People are getting wanting better quality food. And we do have a question kind of right in line with this, so I'm just going to work this right in. It says, hello, Duane, can you tell me, is the bricks in the leaf of a plant the same as the bricks in the fruit of the plant? And this comes from Richard.
No, the answer is no. It varies a lot from plant to plant as far as the fruit bricks. The leaf bricks would be something that might be, we try to keep it a little bit more stable through the different plants, like Dan Scowler was saying last night, that 12 seems to be a threshold number on the plant sap, on the leaf, the bricks of the leaf. And there is a correlation. I don't want to say there isn't a correlation, but I have checked tomato leaves and there were 12 bricks, and the fruit of that tomato plant was 4, which is poor. So I wouldn't say that, there is a correlation, but there are issues to address besides just checking that leaf, and they are not one and the same. It's two different things.
Right, and I would say the leaves are a sugar factory, and so you can see how well is your plant working, making sugars on the leaves. The fruit or the tomato or whatever is kind of the cumulative overall health of that plant in its storage of those sugars. So I agree, it's going to be different.
That's right. The tomato is, you might say that is the warehouse then for the sugars that the leaves do produce from the sunshine.
Right. So continue on. What happened as it went on then?
Well, we started working with other people. They saw our garden. They saw our produce. And they wanted to have some of that, and they wondered, how do you do this? Our garden does this, our garden does that. And I told them, you need to get a soil sample. You need to get an accurate soil sample. Because before I started with you, John, on International Ag Labs, I soil tested with a number of labs around the country, and the results kept coming back that everything's fine. There's nothing wrong. You're in good shape. And I would have a sick field or a sick lawn or a sick garden in front of me. So I knew that wasn't correct. And then when I talked to Dan Scow and I sent in a sample, it came back and said, this soil is sick. And so that was a real good day for me, because I had found a lab that agreed with what the plants were telling me. And so when people ask me, where shall I send a sample, or I do have a soil sample, I ask, well, where is it from? What does it say? And so I told them, you have to take an accurate soil sample so you know where you are, so you know what you have to do to go where you want to go. You want to have produce, you know, like we're having, so you need to find out where you are so you know how to go where we are. And we saw a lot. It seems like most of the gardens have either compost or manures or mulches applied in the extreme so that the potassium and the phosphorus are way too high. That's just a common, very common problem, because if a little is good, more is better seems to be human nature, and that's not really the case. And so I started working on my brother's gardens, and then it just kept on expanding and expanding, and everybody comments, the first thing they comment on, I believe, it might not be always like this, but basically the first thing that everybody comments on is the taste. There's always a taste improvement. They taste it the first year. And then the next thing they comment on is probably insect pressure. Insect pressure drops dramatically when the plants start to pick up the nutrients they need.
You see that on the first year?
What's that?
You see that change on the first year mostly, or you're seeing that more on the second year for the insects?
It does vary, but generally the second year is a good year, or I would say a much better year. The first year, sometimes you see dramatic results like we did, sometimes you don't see as much. Generally, you'll see something. The plants will either look better, they'll produce more, the bricks will be a little higher. But I know some gardens that were very slow in responding, and I don't know why. And then other gardens just kind of jump up and run.
I have seen, and just from talking to people, that in some way, shape, or form, almost everybody I've talked to says they notice some positive influence, impact that's better than the year before. And it varies, but there is a consistent, in some area, it's definitely better, noticeable.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's what we see.
So, you began to start working with other people, and they were getting the soil tested then with International Ag Labs, and then you put together a broadcast then?
Yes. Yes. We would take the soil test, and International Ag Labs makes the recommendations. And then I started doing the blending for a lot of the gardens, and people would start putting that on, and that led into produce gardens, people that sell produce. And we started seeing on the larger scale production, we are now seeing increases in production. And well, on a larger scale, it's different from a home garden. You can't manage it quite as, quite as intensively. So, one time, this brings to mind, one time I was talking with David Yoder. And I said, calcium is king. And he came back just like an echo, and he said, management is queen. And that is absolutely true. It doesn't matter if it's the home garden or the market garden. But what I'm saying is, in the market gardens, the results you see are very, very good and very beneficial to the grower, so much that they almost can't grasp what's happening sometimes, how fast the production is stepping up, how much more produce they have to sell with what they can do. And on a home garden, you can do it, manage it more intensively, and you can step it up even faster than with the produce gardens. But the bricks move up, the production goes. The first thing we see on the produce gardens, I would say, is production. That's the first thing we see moving up, is production. And the bricks moves up a little bit, the squash bugs, the insect pressure starts going down very quickly also. It depends, again, on how far off ideal that the soil test shows. That's really a key factor in how soon you will see improvements, is how far off is the soil to start with. I use the example of two men running a race. Well, the one man, he can run 25 mile an hour, and the other man can run 20 mile an hour. But if the 20 mile an hour man only has a half mile to run, and the 25 mile an hour man has a mile to run, who's going to get there first?
Mm-hmm.
It just depends on where you're starting from, how soon and how dramatic your results are going to be.
That is true. That's entirely true. And we definitely don't see the same results equally on gardens. They're all quite unique.
But it's the only program that I know of, and it's not that it's a program. Us consumers, us people, us gardeners are so used to buying a product that solves all your problems. You know, it's advertised as you put this on, and you can put it on. It doesn't matter from coast to coast, and it'll solve all your problems. And that's not true, because the gardens are not the same. And so with International Ag Labs, you address every garden separately, every field separately. Each one is unique. Therefore, we always see improvement. Instead of, you know, if you would try, I don't want to name any products, but you can name any product on the market, and it might work for your neighbor, and he comes over and says, "Look at these flowers. This is what I put on." "Oh, great, you know, I want some." So you take it home, try it on your flowers, and at best they don't do anything, and the worst case, they might die. Well, that's the way it is with gardens or produce or anything like that. There is no magic bullet, and therefore the unique thing about International Ag Labs is that you address each one's needs, and therefore you get results because you're strengthening the weakest link in the chain.
Right. And the one thing that, you know, we make a pretty strong focus on is calcium. And a lot of standardized products, you know, maybe like a triple 15 or a triple 10 or whatever, do not address the needs of calcium very well. And even if they're trying to, they're not seeing, is it calcium that's available to the plant? And so I think that's one area that really can bring so much change in the produce quality, is making sure that calcium is really addressed.
That brings up a story that I really like. My first cousin down here, he had potatoes. He was raising potatoes for market. And he called me one morning. He said, "Duane, I have thousands of potato beetles. What can I do?" Well, I said, "Let's go out and take the energy, see what the energy is in that soil." And it was low. And so we got together a nutrient drench to spray on the soil to bring the energy up, and also a foliar feed.
And okay, let me stop you there just a second. I want to just mention, why don't you just just very briefly explain what do you mean by checking the energy?
Okay, by checking the energy, what we do is measure the capacity of the soil to carry an electrical charge or energy. We measure what the soil can carry, what the soil is capable or, yes, what soil is capable of carrying. Therefore, if it is low, you need to put out more nutrients so it is capable of carrying more or storing more or giving more to the plants, more energy. You need more nutrients out there, and nutrients are energy. Is that what you mean?
Okay, yes, there's soluble nutrients. And what and if the effect of low energy or low carrying capacity is that the plants don't have energy to grow or
right.
to perform their functions.
And they don't have energy enough to be picking up enough minerals to build strong enough cell walls to resist the insect attacks, which is, it's not just about strong cell walls, but if a plant has enough nutrients, the insects don't attack it.
So then when you put together some nutrients, you were putting something that provided soluble nutrients in the soils. Is that what you were doing?
Yes.
Okay. I didn't want to stop the story, but I want to make sure for people listening what it is that you're doing.
Sure. And we check the energy with a meter. You buy a conductivity meter, and anybody can do this, and it's great to have one to check the energy in the soil and to see if that is the problem or if it's another problem. Well, in this case, it was the problem. The energy was low, and so we mixed up some soluble nutrients, and we also used a foliar spray from International Ag Labs. And he called me, it was 24 hours later. He said, "Dwayne, you have to come see this." He said, "All those potato beetles moved out into the weeds." And I said, "I do have to see this." I drove up there, and his potato patch was clean. I could not find one beetle in that potato patch. And that is unusual. I mean, usually you'll find one or two, but I couldn't find one. And I walked out to the edge. Well, the potato patch was right on the edge, so there was tall weeds right beside it, and I walked out in there, and there was thousands of potato beetles out there in the weeds. And that made a believer out of Jason Krupp.
That's amazing. That's a powerful story. I mean, that's amazing.
It's just when you put down what is needed, it becomes a silver bullet.
That's right. Now, let me ask you a question. Had Jason done the broadcast that year?
Yes.
That's a good point.
If he hadn't done that, why, I'm sure we wouldn't have gotten the results that we did. Is that what you had in mind?
Yes, that's part of it. But the other point is the broadcast alone was insufficient.
Right.
And you need more than just one tool. And I just kind of liken it to if you're a mechanic, you need more than a Phillips screwdriver. You're not going to fix all problems with a Phillips screwdriver.
Yes. I like that.
Okay. So, or, you know what they say, if the only thing you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail.
Yep.
So, go ahead. That's great.
Yes, I'm sure that, and I've had people try this. They came, "Okay, Dwayne, what do you put on?" And I say, "Well, you need the soil test, and you need to put on the dry broadcast. That's the foundation. You're laying the foundation. And then you use these nutrient drenches and these foliar sprays." And they said, "Okay, yeah, that looks good." And then they would come back, and they would look at our garden, and "My, that foliar spray really works. Can I buy some?" I say, yeah, you can buy some, but, you know, it might not do what it's doing on mine." Well, they'd take it home anyway because they saw what it did on ours, and they would spray it on, and nothing happened. And they come back and say, "Well, hey, what's the problem?" Or one time, somebody got a foliar spray and took it home, they measured the bricks before they put it on, and then after they put it on, and the bricks went down, actually. And I liken it to this. It's just like bouncing a golf ball off of a snowbank or a concrete wall. When you put down that broadcast and you start building the soil, then that foliar spray has a base to work off of. If you don't put that down, it's just like throwing a golf ball into a snowbank. It just goes right on through and never comes back. That is what I see, you know, when people try that.
Right. I agree. That's amazing. So, I'm just going to let you keep on talking. You're doing a great job.
Well, it's a lot of fun. It is so much fun to grow better vegetables and better fruits. And the reward in eating it is just, you sit down and you eat a meal and it just feels great. You don't feel bloated. You don't feel heavy. You don't... It's awesome. And we're talking about life. It's actually bringing up the life in the soil. If you have a soil that is not balanced on the soil test, well, the ratios aren't correct. The levels aren't correct. The life is compromised in that soil. So really what we're working with is life. We're getting out of the way, or we're trying to stop doing the wrong thing and starting to do the right thing. Because one thing that Dan Scala said one time in a conference really made an impression on me. He said, if you do the right thing will happen. Well, that's such a simple statement, it almost goes right on over your head, but most of us miss it, you know?
Right.
If you do the right thing will happen. So if you go to town and you buy something, you put it on, nothing happens, then it wasn't the right thing. And when you start to realize that, you feel like you have a better handle on it. You can use your refractometer, you can see, well, is it working or isn't it working? And we had some peach trees this summer that we fertilized and then ate the peaches off of. And it was very interesting. I put the broadcast on last fall. And then this spring, I started kind of late doing the foliar feeding. I didn't get it done in time. And they started curling up a little bit, the peach leaves, peach tree leaves. And so I said, well, yeah, Dwayne, you need to get out there and do the foliar feeding because you're behind. And so I went out there and I started doing the foliar feeding. And those leaves dropped off. And I thought I was putting it on too heavy or something. And then new leaves grew in. That was the first time I ever saw that. The diseased leaves dropped off and new leaves grew on.
And the new leaves came on in the summertime?
It was late spring, I would say. Let's see. It would have been the middle of May, I think. Something like that. It was late spring.
Wow. Well, peach leaf curl is considered, you know, almost incurable among some people.
Really?
Yes. It's a big problem out west, and I'm not sure that that's exactly what you had, but you're describing a symptom of that. But
yeah, I don't either. But they just kind of curled up and wrinkled up. But I was more amazed than anything when those new leaves came back on. And the owner of the property there, they never did anything with the trees or anything. I just asked her, can we, you know, fertilize this and see what happens? She said, I never saw those trees with that much peaches on them. Never. And she's had that property for years. And, actually she owned the property right beside it for years, and she bought this property this summer. But she had been beside those peach trees for years. She said, I've never seen that. She pointed out the one tree. There's six trees in a row. She pointed out the one. She said, I never saw that one with one peach, and it had peaches on it. And we actually broke off one branch. We had one branch break off because I didn't prop it up like I should have. Just the weight of the fruit. That's correct. We went from almost no peaches to breaking off a branch because we had too many, and we had 13 bricks, peaches. That is not the best, but it tasted very good, and I thought it was a giant step for the first year. That was in the first year.
That's amazing. And what was, just out of curiosity, what were the things that you had to work on the soil by that peach tree? What elements?
Calcium. Just low calcium and the phosphorus and potassium were both, they weren't very excessive, but they were a little high. And then the pH was high. And you recommended a nutrient drench that helps to work against the high pH. And the traces, copper was low and manganese was low. And that seemed to be about it.
Okay.
So we applied those and it really helped it.
Well, we got a question here from David Ward. He wanted to know if you can add too much calcium.
Yes, you can. You can get too much of anything, including rain, like we saw this spring. If you add too much calcium, if you go to extreme with calcium, you will compromise life in the soil, just like you do with any other element. We can talk about how it affects this one, how it reacts with that one, and how it changes the pH, and how it does this. The bottom line is we damage the life in the soil if you go to excess on anything.
Well, that's great. I'm going to just take a couple questions here so I don't get too far behind on questions, and then I'll let you carry on with some of your stories. David Ward also writes, I have multiple raised beds. Would you recommend a soil test be done on each bed or a composite soil test?
That depends on how the raised beds were made. If it was all the same material put into the raised beds and they were all handled alike, there is no reason to test them all separately that I know of. If they were treated differently, well then, yes.
Yeah, it gets to be dependent on a little pragmatic too, you know, how many are there, and maybe you can combine some areas that were treated together so that these areas are pretty much all grouped together, and maybe those areas are separated.
And then it also depends on what you're growing. Of course, you wouldn't need to test that separately. If everything was the same, your soil test would be the same all the way across. But then if you're growing blueberries in one and growing, let's say, zucchini in another, you wouldn't treat it the same, not at all.
Right. I have seen a lot of soil tests where people send it in and they'll take multiple samples from the same garden with different beds. And in a lot of cases, you come up with the same pattern. And their fertility recommendations are very similar, but you might vary one, or, you know, just on a trace mineral or something. One needed it, one didn't. And in general, a lot of times it's the same pattern. So. But if there's been an area that you had a bunch of manure on or compost, and then you added a new bed that was completely amended, there would probably be quite a big difference then in that situation.
That's what we see. If something was dumped in one area, well,
right,
that makes a big difference.
David Pelley had a question. They said, Dwayne, what are your natural phosphate levels? So I suppose he's in reference to the gardens that you were talking about.
Well, they go all over. Let me see. The highest I've seen, I believe, was 3,600. And the lowest I've seen was 2. And so naturally here in Arkansas, as far as just the soil, not in a garden or something like that, generally we'll see levels in the, say, 40s to 100. And in Iowa, on the farms, it seems to run low, and in Illinois and in Missouri, it depends on what the soil was used. I'm not sure what he's asking here, but it seems generally on soil that isn't in a garden, it's low in phosphorus. That's a common problem. But on a garden, it seems like people, if they have manure or something else, they put it on the garden. And so most gardens, what I've seen in the last couple years, have been running from... It's unusual to get a garden test in that's under 500 on phosphorus. That's kind of unusual. Sometimes you do.
In your area?
Yes, in my area.
Okay. What about your two gardens? On the first garden you had and now your new garden, what were your phosphorus levels there?
The new garden we have now, the phosphorus levels are 2,400 pounds. And that's very extreme. On the garden that we had... I'll just look it up here while we're talking. That phosphorus level when we started was 536.
Okay.
And the calcium was 1586. And the garden where we have now, the phosphorus level is 2400 and the calcium is 3600.
So they were quite different, actually, weren't they? So in your working around with market gardens, what did you see in market gardens?
Well, when you start with a market garden, generally you start in the greenhouse, starting seeds in flat, and starting your tomatoes or squash or whatever. And the first thing you often see is a potting soil with the energy too high for those little seedlings. And I saw a lot of potassium and nitrogen too high in the potting soil, so therefore the insects become a problem. That's where the market gardens kind of start, and their problems start right there if they don't have a balanced potting soil. And then as you move on, they plant those out into their greenhouses or into their fields. And some greenhouses have energy that's way too high. They have over applied one thing or another, and some of them are very low, and it's very hard to support those plants to get them growing. And out in the fields, of course, with all the rain this year it was a battle to try to keep the energy up in those market gardens. And the bottom line always is they're almost always short on calcium. Almost always. And if you don't have adequate calcium levels, it is much harder to stabilize the energy in the soil. It's kind of back to that base you have to build on. If you don't have calcium there, it's like trying to build on quicksand for a while. You have to throw in a lot of stuff to get it to hold, and then you can start building off of that. And so a lot of market gardeners are working on their base, trying to build up something that will hold so they can build up on it. And so especially out in the fields, and then like I said, some of the greenhouse, why we were seeing energy way too high.
Well, I would just like to... comment that you're going to be discussing in the Call to Arms class that you're going to be discussing in depth and demonstrating the taking of energy reading in the soil, and your case study is going to involve interviewing and talking with a couple growers who were really benefited by an understanding of checking the energy in the soil and how they had to really to manage it. They were taking the conductivity reading daily for a while, I believe, and that had a big impact on their management once they used that tool. And so I'm looking forward to it. And I think, you know, we could say the broadcast is real important, the remineralization is real important, and it is, and the foliar spray is really important. But the one key thing that a consultant and a lab cannot do is we cannot take that energy reading for you ongoing. And that's something that must be stressed. It's critically important for success. Keep the energy from extremes, not too low, not too high. Create that right environment for optimum plant growth. So I think you've got a presentation that's really critical for farmers' success or market gardeners' success. Is their role that they need to be very active in.
It's absolutely key. It's a key thing. That brings out something. This summer we had a lot of rain down here, and that flushes out the nutrients in the soil. Therefore, the energy in the soil goes down, and it can't support plant life as well. And I was taking care of these 9 tomato plants for a friend of mine, and I was watching the energy, and he was putting on the nutrients lots of times for me. Well, one time I got up there, and he said, "Well, no, I didn't get it on this time," and the herbs was down way low, and I picked some tomatoes and brought them home. And the point I want to make here is that the bricks was down 2 points from the time I had picked before then. So this energy thing is huge.
What was the time difference?
The time difference was probably 2 weeks, I'd say, not more.
Okay.
If the energy goes down, the bricks goes down, the quantity goes down, they just kind of give up and sit there. Well, they just don't have any life to keep them going.
That's amazing. It's pretty amazing that the bricks just goes right down on the produce by a lack of or a dropping of the energy in the soil.
First time I had witnessed such a dramatic drop like that. And so for market gardeners, produce growers, it's a key thing to take those readings and to put on what you need to put on to keep that up, and that will work. That is probably the single most important thing a market gardener can do throughout the year.
Right. It's amazing what we've seen. Would you just touch for a few minutes on fertigation? Where this is where we do with market gardens, we use fertigation a lot or drenches, but with the home gardens, we mostly just use nutrient drenches, and they're both fulfilling the same thing. They push the herbs back up. What are you seeing with fertigation, and what are people using now?
Well, people use a wide range of products, and there again, what we need to do is, does it work or doesn't it work? And it comes right back down to using that ergs meter to see if what you're putting out is working. But then you have to be sure. It's like Wendell Owens says, do the right thing, then the results will come. What I'm saying is, if you don't put out the right thing, you can actually increase your ergs and damage the plant performance. If you put out the right thing, you will increase the herbs and you will increase plant performance. And what we saw a lot with putting it through the drip tape and so on and so forth was that you could impact the plant health, you could impact the quantity of the yield, you could impact the quality of the yield, and you could help on the weak links in the chain. Say, for instance, the calcium was real low, and so we would put out micronized lime, for instance, a real fine calcium that would go through the drip tape, And we actually saw the leaves on tomatoes increase in thickness. And they felt much thicker and much tougher. And we would see, what was it? Something that didn't want to flower. Oh, it was mums. And we would put out the appropriate nutrient drench through the drip line, and it helped them flower. And so you can do, with a drip tape underneath plastic, you can't do as much as you can with the broadcast, but you can change that little microclimate right around the roots. And you can do a lot of good with that. You can add calcium by putting out micronized lime. You can add taste to the tomato by putting out other rock minerals. You can add soluble nutrients through the lime to address specific problems. You can do a lot of things through the drip tape, and we did a lot of things, but it's not as good as putting out the broadcast, but it's a very valuable tool if you can if you can determine what you need and then put that out through that drip line, you can benefit all those areas that I named off: quantity, quality, and plant health, and you can also work on the insect pressure just by improving the nutrients there.